Can you talk a little bit about the pragmatic issues of using daratumumab, particularly related to the infusion, what your thoughts are about sub-Q daratumumab, and how this man has done on it?
So the first infusion of daratumumab is always a little bit tricky. I think it really helps to have personnel who are familiar with the drug giving it. A lot of times what I'll do when I'm partnering with community oncologists is offer to have their patients get the first dose in our center. We're open 24 hours a day, so there's not this issue of, is the infusion going to be done before 5 o'clock rings? And again, experience of nursing with the infusions really helps as well. I think that appropriately pre-medding does help with some. I uniformly now will add in Singulair as a pre-medication. Again, if patients have any COPD history, I'll make sure that they are using their inhalers and nebulizing treatments. But even despite doing everything possible, most patients will still have some sort of infusion reaction. And it's really, I usually counsel the patients that it's just really going to be mostly a boring day for them. So it's not necessarily that these infusion reactions are scary. They aren't, at least in my experience, like first-time rituximab infusions. But it's just a matter of kind of slogging through the infusion, starting, stopping until all of their little reactions, which really can be as kind of simple as a runny nose or sniffly nose, kind of calms down. In general, after the first infusion, things go very smoothly. I've really not had issues with second dose infusions. Having said all that, of course, I'm excited about the potential for sub-Q daratumumab. It's, of course, difficult even in a larger center to be able to get those 8 to 12 hour chairs for daratumumab. And obviously, for patient experience, it's going to be much more preferable to have a shorter infusion time.
What do we know about sub-Q daratumumab in terms of efficacy? And I don't know if you know anything about the actual technical aspects of how it's done, how much volume fluid involves. Is
Yeah,
that
so my understanding is that that's still a little bit in flux based on what was described at this last ASH in terms of how it was administered versus what was recently described to me in a pre-site study visit for a study that's going to involve sub-Q dara. So I think that they're still working a little bit on it, at least when they presented it at ASH. I think there were multiple injection sites. I think there might have been some sort of pump that was used, actually. And I don't know if they've been able to decrease the volume. It's definitely more than just a simple, 5 cc sub-Q shot. But with respect to efficacy, it looks like so far the preliminary numbers look to be equivalent to what we saw with the initial phase 1/2 data with IV daratumumab. Obviously, there's going to be, or it's perhaps already in progress, a larger study that's directly comparing the efficacy of the two preparations.
Where do you think daratumumab is heading? Ever since I first started hearing about it, people talked about it maybe becoming the rituximab of myeloma, being added to everything up front, et cetera. And I think there were some data presented at ASCO looking at it. I think it was up front with RVD. What do we know about using it earlier? And do you think that's where we're heading?
I think that's probably where we're headed. The initial kind of feasibility shows that it is feasible. An important study that is being done partnering with the Alliance is a study that is a phase 2 randomized study looking at RVD followed by transplant, followed by RVD and lenalidomide maintenance versus the same backbone, but with daratumumab added at every point. And so it would not surprise me if that becomes the new standard of care so that we're seeing daratumumab in the upfront setting and the maintenance setting. What that then means in the relapse setting, I don't know. I don't know if it should be used the way we use rituximab in the lymphoma world, which is, okay, you switch out the chemo, but you still leave in the rituximab. I think at this point, we don't fully understand the mechanisms for resistance for daratumumab, and obviously we need to understand that to know whether we should keep it on board for second-line therapy, third-line therapy, et cetera. And of course, with the other types of monoclonal antibodies out there, should we be combining them or should we simply be removing daratumumab once a patient becomes refractory to their current line of therapy? I don't know.